On Thursdays, we read from your email.
First, a correction.
In our report yesterday on the government's revamping of a major diabetes study, we misidentified a source. His name is James Dove, and he's president of the American College of Cardiology. Now, much of the email we received recently dealt with our coverage of the run-up to Super Tuesday. Over the past week, we heard about the candidates' positions on four issues: the economy, healthcare, immigration, and the war in Iraq.
I was disappointed in your analysis of how and when the Democratic candidates chose their positions on the Iraq War, writes Elizabeth Keithley of Greensboro, North Carolina. You duplicated campaign rhetoric rather than digging deeper for a more incisive analysis. Barack Obama compares his statements to Hillary Clinton's votes. Obama was not in the Senate in October of 2002 and has admitted not knowing how he would have voted on the military authorization because he was not privy to the information the Senate had at the time.
But Maggie Johnson of Seattle gave us high marks for the series. I caught two of your segments comparing the candidates' stance on specific issues. This is the most helpful campaign coverage I have heard. Thank you for doing more than the horse race.
On Tuesday, we heard from a sampling of voters at polling places across the nation, starting in Hartford, Connecticut.
My name is William Condell. We're under attack from the jihadist. We need a strong person in the White House.
My name is Kathleen Leonard. I work for a laborers union. I hope my vote will keep jobs in the United States.
My name is Walter Martin. I hope my vote can help us get better health and welfare.
My name is Deborah Prince, and I'm from Atlanta. The issues that are important to me are the health care and education of the children and the jobs, a little everything.
Those voices brought this response from Margaret Rohde of Philadelphia. Just now, listening to the voters talk about voting, I'm surprised to find tears rolling down my cheeks. The wisdom and thoughtfulness of these people is just a small sample of what is happening today. They are the deciders, and we are in good hands.
Susan Langston heard our story about how the prolonged drought in Georgia may mean that thousands of outdoor pools have to close this summer. I live and work in the suburbs of North Atlanta, she writes, and driving home, I suddenly noticed a big water slide where there wasn't one before. As I turn the corner, I see a sign promoting a new Gwinnett County water park that says, "Lifeguards needed." This says more clearly than anything that Georgians don't want to take responsibility for conserving water at the expense of our fun and convenience.
Finally, many of you wrote with reaction to my interview with Franklin McCain. He was one of four students in Greensboro, North Carolina, who decided to protest a whites-only lunch counter at Woolworth's Five and Dime back in 1960.
I can tell you that 15 seconds after I sat on that stool, I had the most wonderful feeling. I had a feeling of liberation, restored manhood. I had a natural high, and I felt as though I wouldn't have been cheated out of life had that been the end of my life at that second or that moment.
Christopher Anderson of Puerto Williams, Chile, writes, "While I now live in the Cape Horn archipelago of southern Chile, I grew up not far from Greensboro. I'd heard the story of the sit-in many times, but when Mr. McCain recalled how the elderly white lady sitting next to him touched him on the back on her way out of the store and said, 'Boys, I am so proud of you. I only regret that you didn't do this 10 years ago,' I was moved. Thanks for reminding us that courage and decency come in many unexpected forms."
If you've got a reminder for us, please write. Go to npr.org and click on Contact Us at the top of the page.